You should have expected it. The ball was one of the first of the season, and the first hosted by the future Duke and Duchess of Lynn since the birth of their first child. Even if King weren't brother-in-law to the infamous Talbot sisters, all of London would have been in curious attendance. But he still could have mentioned Peg would be there. Alec pushed away the cacophonous memories of a broken heart and a broken spirit, leaving only the memory of Lillian's righteous fury. He should have been able to manage that fury, to temper it. And perhaps he would have done, if not for the shock and sting of seeing Peg, of remembering her. And then Lily had called him a brute and a beast, and he'd remembered the same words on another set of beautiful lips. Another time, another woman. Another encounter that ended with him left alone, imperfect. And then Lily, hurt, lashing out. "Your reputation precedes you." Shit. It wasn't an excuse for his behaviour. He should have protected Lily. Ironically, protecting her was the only thing he seemed unable to do, despite it being the singular requirement of guardianship. Perhaps he'd be more successful at it if she weren't so beautiful, if those grey eyes didn't seem to see everything, if she weren't so willing to tell him when he was out of line, when he was behaving abominably, if she weren't so strong and independent and willing to fight for herself. If she weren't so damn perfect, perhaps he could be a better man when he was with her. She'd called him a beast, and he was. Somehow she made him one. Or perhaps she simply saw the truth and left him there, at the centre of the ballroom, feeling like one. The orchestra stopped, and the couples around him, doing their best to both stare at and ignore him, began to dissipate as the musicians prepared for the next set. The movement away from the dance unstuck him, and he turned away, committed to a single goal, finding a decent drink. Crossing the ballroom, Alec ducked through a doorway into a dimly lit corridor that he vaguely remembered led to a series of salons. If he had to guess, he'd imagine there was scotch stored somewhere nearby. Once he'd found it, he would seek out Lillian, who was no doubt hiding in the ladies' salon, wishing she'd donned an appropriate garment and hopefully regretting the fact that she'd left him in the middle of a ballroom as couples continued to dance around him. Likely not regretting that at all, as it was his fault that she'd run. He deserved the embarrassment, and she deserved his apology. She'd get it, in the form of one of the men on his list. He'd seek one out and deliver him to her, for a waltz and a refreshment. They could take a turn about the room or whatever ridiculous courtship England required. He wouldn't turn her about the room if he were courting her. He'd take her into the darkness on the terrace beyond the ballroom, down into the gardens where the light from the ball was gone and the stars above were all they could see, and he'd kiss her until she wanted nothing but to marry him, until she couldn't remember any words but yes. Then he'd lay her down on the cool earth, strip her bare, and feast on her with nothing but the sky as witness. After which he'd take her to Scotland and marry her, immediately. And she would regret it, forever. He ran a hand over his face at the thought, the idea of his hands on her, of them soiling her perfection, making him wish she was anywhere but here. Christ, he had to get her married. If it killed him, he would do the right thing and get her married. But first, he needed a drink. He opened the first door he came to, entering a dark room, leaving the door open to allow some semblance of the already diffused light in. He squinted into the darkness, making out a sideboard at the far end of what he imagined was some kind of study, a decanter beckoning him into the night. He headed for it, grateful for the quiet, momentary distance from the ball, the aristocracy, and London in general. Both the Marquess and the Marchioness of Eversley had spent their childhood mere miles from the Scottish border, so Alec was confident that whatever the amber liquid in the decanter was, it was whisky, as it should be. He poured two fingers and drank, wrapped in the familiar, rich flavour. Satisfaction flooded through him. King was a good friend, stocking the house with Alec's whiskey, distilled and bottled on Stuart land. Alec would have to tell Lillian about Scotland's superior whiskey at some point, yet another thing her England could not claim. He leaned back against the sideboard and exhaled, enjoying the shadows that hid him from view. It was so rare that he felt invisible in London, and the moment was warm and welcome and as close to perfect as England could be. And then she entered the room, and he was reminded of how imperfect England was, of how it had destroyed him and threatened to destroy her, of how much safer and happier she would be in Scotland, far from this place with its judging eyes and its inane rules. For a moment, he imagined Lily in the wilds of his country. He wanted to see her on the banks of the Oban, on the cliffs high above the Firth of Forth, in fields of heather that spread like purple fire as far as the eye could see. Scotland would suit her. The thought came with a longing that ripped him from fantasy and returned him to the moment. He should have said something immediately, should have announced himself, and he might have if she hadn't immediately moved to the window at the opposite end of the room. Whether it was moonlight or the residual glow of the ballroom in the back gardens, she was cast in a light that made her ethereal and so beautiful that his breath caught in his chest. She raised her hand to the glass window, three long, delicate fingers trailing down the pane, and she let out a long, lush breath, one that filled the room with emotion, frustration, sadness, and something much more powerful, longing. Alec's breath returned with force at the last, at the familiarity of it, because in that moment he longed too. The thought shook him. He was her guardian, she was his ward. She was a grown woman, ward on a technicality. It did not matter, she remained his ward, she remained under his protection, and he might have been terrible at protecting her until this moment. He might have failed at protecting her reputation and her emotions, but he could damn well protect her from himself. And besides, he did not care for beautiful women. They were pretty promises that too quickly became lies. The thought returned him to the present, and he made to move, to talk to her and apologize and start anew, to convince her that he would play his role perfectly and that they would find her the life she wished, a proper man, a loving family, a future that was filled with home and hearth and happiness, as she deserved, whatever she wished. But before he could speak up from his place in the darkness, the door to the room closed with a soft snick, startling them both, directing their attention to the shadowy figure just inside the room.
Hello, Lily.
Hawkins. Alec had an instant desire to destroy the man, for risking being found alone with Lillian, for once more tempting the fates of scandal with a dark room and an unmarried woman. It did not escape him that he'd been alone with her moments earlier, but it was different. There was no time to pass the double standard of the situation, however, as Hawkins was moving toward Lily with a speed Alec did not like. He straightened in the darkness, ready to approach and tear the man limb from limb, but she spoke before he could move. Derek. Alec hated Hawkins then, as his given name swirled through the darkness, soft and lovely on her lips. Why are you here?
It's London in season. Of course I'm here, Hawkins said. I am everywhere.
He waved a hand.
Like ether.
Alec rolled his eyes. Cecily said you're here with a rich widow, for the money. Good girl. Disdain was precisely what she should be feeling.
Cecily Talbot is nothing. Cheap as the rest of her family.
What an unmitigated arse the man was. I just met her family. They seem quite expensive, and wonderfully honest, unlike others.
All that glitters is not gold, sweet Lily.
It seems to me that Cecily is made of stronger stuff than gold. She's judged harshly by the ton, in large part due to her brief courtship with you, and yet she remains tall in the face of their scorn. I wish I was as strong as she. The accusation came next. She refused to be ruined by you.
I did not ruin you, he said.
Of course you did, without care. The accusation was not angry or hurt. It came on a thread of honesty that Alec had once admired and loathed. She should be hurt and angry at him.
Poor lovely Lily, Hawkins said, reaching for her,
running a finger down her cheek, down the skin that Alec thought must be impossibly soft.
You were the mirror that reflected my genius.
Lily closed her eyes at the man's touch, or perhaps his words. Either way, Alec hated the longing on her face, mixed with pain. He decided then and there to destroy Derek Hawkins, for touching her, for hurting her. He would leave him broken here, in this dark room. He'd have to apologize to the Marchioness of Eversley, he imagined, and purchase a replacement carpet, but surely she would understand that the world was better off without this loathsome eel in it. Before Alec could do anything, however, Lily spoke. "You promised me you wouldn't tell anyone about the painting. You told me it was for you and you alone."
"And it was at the start, darling."
"Don't call me that." Lily's words came sharp and steel.
"Why ever not?" Hawkins said with a laugh. "Oh, Lily, don't be so pedestrian. You were my muse. I am sorry that you misjudged the role. You were the conduit for my art, the vessel through which the world will see the truth of my timeless influence. The portrait is my Madonna and child, my creation of man. For centuries to come, people will see it and they will whisper my name with breathless awe."
He paused for effect, then practiced the whisper in question.
"Derek Hawkins."
What utter rubbish. If Alec didn't loathe the man already, he certainly would now.
"And what of my name?" Lillian asked.
"Don't you see? It doesn't matter what happens to you. This is for art, for all time. You are a sacrifice to beauty, to truth, to eternity. What would you have me do, Lily? Hide it away?"
"Yes."
"What purpose would that serve?"
"It would make you decent," she cried. "Noble, the man I..."
Alec stiffened, hearing the rest of the sentence as clearly as if she'd said it. "The man I love.
This is the noblest act I could commit, darling."
There was a long silence, during which Alec could virtually feel Lily's disappointment. And when she finally spoke, saying small and soft, "I thought you loved me," Alec thought his heart might explode in his chest.
"Perhaps I did in my own way, sweetheart. But marrying you, impossible. I'm the greatest artist of our time, of all time. And you are beautiful, but, as I said, your beauty exists as a vessel for my talent. The whole world will soon see how much."
He set his hand to her cheek.
"Darling, I never pushed you away. I was happy to have you. I would have you still. That is why I followed you here."
"The bastard." Alec stiffened as Lily snapped her gaze to Hawkins.
"Still?"
The artist leaned close, and Alec held back a roar of fury at the nearness until the pompous prick whispered,
"Still? Now?"
There was no mistaking the sexual promise in the words.
"You would like that, would you not?"
That was it. Alec went for him. Except Lily got there first. It felt exceedingly good to punch a man in the nose. She knew she shouldn't do it. She knew it wouldn't solve her problem. Knew, too, that it would do nothing but anger Derek and likely make him more committed to her ruination. It would only increase her shame for her feelings, for her behaviour, for the consequences of it. But there was only so much a woman could be expected to take. And once he'd resurrected the shame, along with all the pain and sadness and doubt that he'd settled upon her, she hadn't been able to help herself.
"Oh!"
Derek reached up to check the state of his handsome, exceedingly straight nose.
"You hit me!"
"You deserved it," she said, shaking out her hand, doing her best to ignore the sting of it.
It was the first time she'd ever punched a thing, and it hurt, frankly, more than she would have imagined.
"You little bitch! You will regret that!" "Not as much as you will regret using such language with her," came a low Scottish burr from the darkness.
Lily let out a surprised squeak as she spun to find Alec crossing the room, 6.5 feet of massive, muscular fury with a single goal, to finish the job that Lily had started. His fist was significantly larger than hers and packed an impressive wallop. She should not have enjoyed the sound of bone meeting flesh, but, she confessed, it was rather thrilling. As was the way Hawkins dropped to the floor like a sack of grain, and the way Alec followed him down to lift him up with the strength of one massive arm and hit him a second time, and a third. It was when he pulled back for the fourth blow that his coat split in two right down the back seam. In the sound of the rending, Lily found her voice.
"Stop!"
Alec froze, as though she held him on a string. He looked back over his shoulder.
"Do you want him?"
She shook her head, confused by both the question and his brogue, thickened with fury. What?
Do you want him, he repeated, to husband? What?
This time it was Derek who sputtered the reply. Alec returned his attention to his victim.
I did not give you permission to speak.
He looked back to Lily.
If you want him, he is yours.
She believed him. There was no question in her mind that if she announced that she wanted to be Mrs. Derek Hawkins, Alec would make it so. They would be married before sunup. She'd get the man she'd mooned over for months, the one she'd cried herself to sleep for more times than she could count. Alec would give him to her. A week ago, perhaps she'd have wanted it. But now... No, she whispered.
With conviction, lass.
No, she said more firmly. You are terribly committed to getting me married, Your Grace, if you think to marry me to him.
I won't marry her, Derek declared. You cannot make me.
Alec glared at him.
Once again, I am nae interested in hearing you speak.
Lily met Derek's gaze. For the record, as he is the Duke of Warwick, I think he absolutely could make you marry me, Mr. Hawkins. She enunciated his lack of title, knowing it made him mad with jealousy, before returning her attention to Alec. But what his grace cannot do is make me marry you, or anyone for that matter. She thought for a moment that she saw his lips twitch at the words, at the way she stood up for herself. She wondered if he was slightly proud of her. She was rather proud of herself, honestly.
I would nae dream of forcing you into marriage, Miss Hargrove, he replied.
We both know that's not true, she retorted. But I'm not interested in the current option.
And thank God for that, Alec retorted. You'd be lucky to have me, Derek spat.
Alec immediately looked back at him.
It speaks again.
He raised his fist and struck Derek once more.
Next time I'll take out teeth.
A thrill went through her at his unhesitating response, at the way he instantly protected her. She liked it far too much. If she wasn't careful, Alec would be as dangerous as Derek had been. More so. That's enough, Your Grace, Lillian said. You've done your damage. Alec stood, bringing Derek to his feet at the same time. When he did not immediately let Derek go, Lily said. Release him. Not without a final word, Alec leaned down, terrifying the other man, enjoying the horror on his idiot face.
I told you I would destroy you, did I not? And that was before you touched her, before you insulted her.
He released his grip, dropping Derek to the ground, sending him scurrying backward like a beetle, reaching for his bloodied nose.
You broke my nose! I am an actor!
Alec reached into his own pocket, withdrawing his handkerchief to wipe the blood from his knuckles.
If you come near her again, I shall do more than break your nose. I shall make it impossible for you to walk the boards of your damn stage, and I shall do so without hesitation, and with exceeding pleasure. It won't change anything, Derek sniped. The moment the world sees my painting, they'll see the truth.
He looked at Lily.
No one will have you honourably, and the only companionship you'll be able to find is your brutal duke and a handful of men who want you for just that companionship.
The shame came again, hot and angry and desperate. And somehow, in all of it, all she wished was that Alec had not heard it. She wished him to think more of her. But he did not, of course. Hadn't he said the same to her not an hour earlier in the centre of the ballroom? Sell when you can. He did not see the similarity, apparently, as he went after Derek again, lifting him by the collar until the man she'd once loved dangled above the floor. Lily's eyes went wide as Hawkins grasped at Alec's wrists ineffectively.
Give me one decent reason not to kill you right now.
Hawkins squeaked his protest. Let him go, Lily said.
Why?
Alec did not look to her. Because I'm ruined anyway, with or without his murder on my conscience, she said. And because I asked you to. He did look at her then, the moon casting the slopes and angles of his handsome face in beautiful light. He was the most handsome man she'd ever seen, even now, his coat in tatters, his eyes flashing fire. Especially now. Because I asked you to, she repeated, her gaze on his. He put Derek down. Derek rolled his shoulders back, smoothing his coat sleeves, apparently unaware that his face and cravat were bloodstained. By Alec, for Lily's honour. No one had ever cared for her honour before. She wasn't sure if she liked it. She liked it. But she had no time to like it. Instead, she turned to Derek. Remember this when you wake in the morning and you're able to see the sun. Remember I gave you something you refused me.
I never threatened your life.
She took a deep breath. That is precisely what you did.
Lillian,
Alec said, and Lily held up a hand at the caution in the word, at his disapproval. He might be her guardian, but she would not allow him to manage her. She stepped around him, coming to face this man she'd once loved, this man who she'd once believed hung the moon beyond. I cannot salvage the opinion of those around me, the opinion society shares, the opinion that will be solidified when you exhibit the portrait. She paused, took a deep breath, and added, I cannot ever be rid of the shame I feel for the whole debacle. She looked at Alec then, acknowledged that he was right, that his plan was the best one. I cannot ever outrun it. Understanding flared in his beautiful brown eyes, and she waited for triumph to follow with the realization of what she would do. She would find a man, and she would marry, because there was no other option. Get out, Derek. He insisted the last word.
Unless a man would display the painting tonight to punish you, to punish your brute of a guardian. But I am a greater mind, more evolved than any the world has ever known, and so I bestow upon you my benevolence.
He paused in that way that Derek did, the way that he always had when she posed for him. She'd used to hang on those pauses, certain they predicted utter brilliance. Now she knew the truth. All that came out of Derek Hawkins' mouth was sewage.
Consider it a gift, little Lily, for the inspiration.
The way the word oozed from him made Lily want to retch with regret.
In your week, you might consider making your beast less savage.
Alec stilled, looking down at her hand and then to Derek.
The only thing stopping me from tearing you limb from limb is her benevolence, you pompous nut. Get out!
The words were barely restrained, terrifying enough to send Hawkins running for the door. Lily watched the door for a long moment after Derek left, eventually speaking to it, unable to look at Alec. Tell me, if he'd painted a nude man, would London be so scandalized? When Alec did not speak, Lily answered the question herself. Of course not.
Lillian, he whispered.
And for a fleeting moment she regretted refusing him the use of her nickname. After all, if anyone should use it, was it not the man who fought for her without hesitation, without her deserving it? She took a deep breath. My reputation is ruined because I am a woman and we are not our own. We belong to the world, our bodies, our minds.
You don't belong to anyone. That's the point. If you did, this would not be such a scandal.
She raised a brow. I belong to you, do I not?
No.
Her lips twisted at the instant reply. Of course not. You never wanted me. No one ever wants me, not in any way that matters. It was his turn to shake his head.
That is nay what I meant.
That doesn't make it less true. He watched her for a long moment.
It does nay matter what is true. Only what you believe.
She nodded at her own words on his lips. Then we are in agreement. I'm not interested in laying blame, Your Grace. I am simply interested in leaving this room and deciding which lucky gentleman I must charm into saddling himself with me as wife. He swore again, and she took it as her cue to leave, turning on her heel and heading to the door where Derek had exited minutes earlier. Once there, she turned back to find Alec still a stone in a wash of moonlight, his coat in tatters, along with a tear in one thigh of his trousers. Set against the dainty furniture in the little sitting room, he looked like something out of a scandalous novel, a criminal sneaking into a proper home to pillage his spoils. And somehow, at the same time, he looked rather perfect. What if he did want her? She put the thought away. Let me captain this ship, Alec. I might dash it upon the rocks and send myself into the depths, but at least I did it myself. Before he could reply, she turned away and yanked open the door, coming face to face with Countess Rowley, who seemed in no way surprised to discover Lily inside the dark room. Indeed, Lady Rowley simply smiled a secret smile and leaned in. Is Alec within, darling? Lily was set back by the familiarity in the question. Alec, the Countess clarified. Your guardian. Lily gave a little humorless huff of laughter at the descriptor and opened the door farther, revealing Alec beyond. Lady Rowley's gaze lit in predatory glee.
I knew it! I just witnessed your former lover exit this corridor looking as though he'd been taken to task by a devastating brute, and I knew it was my devastating brute.
Lily went stick straight at the words. She hated the sound of them in the Countess's pretty, breathless voice, hated the possession inherent in them, but most of all she hated the descriptor, disparaging and sexual, like he was a bear to be tamed rather than a man.
Alec, you heroic beast, Lady Rowley purred. I was hoping I'd find you somewhere dark, darling, to resume our acquaintance.
There was no question of the meaning of the Countess's words. They were lovers. Lily ignored the pang of disappointment that surged, telling herself that any disappointment was because she had thought better of his taste in lovers. It had nothing to do with the idea that he had a lover, full stop. Lily looked over her shoulder to Alec, who was looking directly at Lady Rowley, with an intensity Lily had never experienced, and she could not stop the emotion that flooded her. Betrayal.
Darling, the Countess sighed. Look at you, coat in tatters, still as big and broad and strong as ever. My goodness, I've missed you.
Lily closed the door before she could hear the answer. She did not wish to hear the answer. Let him spend the rest of the evening with his paramour. Let her attend to his bruised knuckles and ego. Lily wanted out of this room, out of this house, out of this damn world with its rules that meant different things for different people. And she meant to get out without him. This was not the first time she'd been alone, after all. Lillian Hargrove had made a life of being alone, and the arrival of a massive Scotsman would not change that. By the time she reached the entrance to the ballroom, she was nearly deafened by the cacophonous chatter within. No one was dancing, despite the orchestra playing a perfect quadrille. Instead, all of London stood in little huddled groups, bowed heads and fluttering fans and gleeful sotto voce. Despite the fact that this was an event designed to underscore the social differences between people, gossip remained the great unifier. Lily was no fool. She knew the subject of the chatter, knew too that she would soon be a part of it. Even before Cecily Talbot approached, clutched her hands and spoke, low and quiet.
Good Lord! When I said that you and Warnick should make Hawkins the villain, I did not mean that you should beat him almost to death.
It wasn't almost to death, Lily said.
He crossed the room with a swollen cheek, a split lip, and an eye that would make a fighter wince.
Cecily paused. Not that I didn't enjoy the portrait he made. Lily couldn't help but smile at that.
I imagine you did.
He deserved it and more, Cecily agreed, before adding. Was it very exciting to watch Warnick go at him? He's a glorious brute of a man.
Lily was coming to hate the word.
He's not a brute.
Indeed not,
Cecily immediately corrected herself.
He cares for you a great deal, obviously.
She didn't like the way Cecily's words made her feel, full of confusion and something akin to sick. She settled on.
Everyone saw Derek.
It was marvellous, Cecily said with glee.
I suppose I'm at the centre of another scandal.
Psh!
Cecily waved the words away.
It's the same scandal. You've nothing on the Talbot sisters. But I shall acknowledge this. You certainly know how to enter a ballroom.
Cecily looked to Lily's dress.
And how to dress for it.
Lily didn't find it amusing. Instead, she found it terribly defeating. Regret coursed through her, and she desperately wanted to be anywhere but here.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Listen to me, Cecily said with firm conviction, squeezing Lily's hands tightly and forcing her to meet her eyes. You do not let them win.
Not ever. There is nothing in the world they like more than tearing a woman down for having too much courage. And there is nothing in the world that makes them angrier than not being able to break her. Lily looked to the woman, an Amazon set down in the heart of London. Beautiful in her too tight red dress, a dress that no doubt made other women green with envy. She was everything Lily was not, confident, sure of her place, happy with it even. Lily wondered what that might be like. Perhaps it was all of that confidence that made Lily so willing to talk, bold enough to say something she probably shouldn't have said. Derek asked me to be his mistress again. Derek is a troll. Lily laughed, because it was either that or cry. He is, rather, an arrogant, addle-pated, pin-pricked troll. Lily's eyes went wide at the creative insult. One with a great deal of power to ruin me, it seems. Cecily took her hands again, and there was comfort in the warmth and firmness of her grip. We shall survive it. The we set Lily back. We shall. Of course, Cecily said with a shrug. It is what friends do, help each other survive. Friends. She'd never had a friend, but she'd read about them. She shook her head. Why would you be so kind to me? Shadow passed over Cecily's face, there, then gone. Because I know what it feels like to have them all loathe you, and I've seen them chase another away. Women like us must stay together, lovely Lily. Lily wanted to ask more, but there was no time to do so, as Alec chose that moment to reappear from the hallway beyond, coat shredded, trousers in tatters, gloves stained red with Derek's blood. Cool, he looks like a prize fighter. Or worse, Cecily said, her gaze locked on him as he approached and took Lily's elbow in hand. Oh, the female half of the ton wishes to be you tonight, Lillian Hargrove. Lily couldn't imagine why, as Alec looked as though he wished to murder someone, as though he had already murdered someone.
We leave now,
Alec growled, ignoring Cecily, and Lily knew better than to argue with the glittering anger in his brown eyes or the firm set of his square jaw. Cecily leaned in to kiss Lily on her cheek and took the moment to whisper. Be careful. In my experience, men who look like that are ready for one of two things, kissing or killing, and he's already attempted the latter. Chapter 10. Be still, my beating Scott. Diluted Duke disciplines Derek. He did not trust himself to speak. Not when he faced the worst of London in Eversley's ballroom, burning in the heat of their combined, not quite, gazes. And not when he guided Lily through the room and he heard the whispers. The diluted Duke, covered in Hawkins' blood. The girl is nothing but trouble. Poor Hawkins. Certainly, Alec did not trust himself to speak at the idea that it was Hawkins who deserved the sympathy in this farce, as if all Lily deserved was judgment. The Scottish brute. He turned at the last, his gaze falling to a woman nearby, her eyes familiar, knowing. He gritted his teeth, the words echoing through him, his clothes in shreds, the smell of Peg's saccharine perfume still on them. The memory of her hands sliding over his chest, the touch evoking loathing, not of her, but of countless Englishwomen who thought of him as a notch in their collective bedposts, good enough to take to bed, not enough for more. A conquest, the great Scottish beast. "Come and see me, darling," Peg had whispered, her skilled hands slipping over his chest, as though he belonged to her, as though he would follow like a pup on a lead. She'd slipped a card with her direction in his pocket, reminding him keenly of their past, of the way she'd so easily manipulated him, despite thinking him less than her, unworthy. How many others had thought the same? How often had he thought it himself? He did not belong here, in this place with Lillian, beautiful and English and so thoroughly perfect. Alec did not speak as he and Lily left the ballroom, passing a shocked king, did not even pause to bid farewell. And he did not speak when he ripped open the door to his carriage and lifted Lily inside. She did speak, however, punctuating her little squeak of surprise at being hefted into the carriage with an, "I'm quite able to climb steps, Your Grace." Alec didn't reply, instead lifting himself into the carriage behind her, pulling the door closed with a perfunctory click and knocking twice upon the roof, setting the vehicle in motion. He could not reply, too filled with frustration and shame and embarrassment and a keen sense of unworthiness. Between the state of his clothing and the battle with Hawkins and the arrival of Peg, he'd had enough of this horrible town. He wanted to destroy the entirety of the city, pull it down brick by brick, and return north like the marauding Scots of yore, who would loathe England with every fibre of their being. He'd bring her with him, a spoil. He rubbed a hand over his face, wishing himself anywhere but here. He'd never in his life felt so out of place, as though everything he did was wrong. And then there was Lily, who seemed to take every blow delivered and parry with skill beyond her years, a constant reminder that he was an utter failure at doing right. So it was that Alec was less than thrilled when she spoke again, filling the carriage with her reminders. "Well, I imagine we shall be well received in the best of London houses after tonight." He bit back the curse he wanted to hurl into the night, choosing silence in its stead. She, however, did not choose silence. "You cannot honestly believe that anyone will marry Hawkins' muse." He speared her with a look.
"Don't call yourself such."
"Fine, Hawkins' mistress." The words set him further on edge.
"Were you his mistress?"
She met his gaze. "Does it matter?" "Only that he did not honour you. Only that he did not deserve you."
"Someone will marry you. Make your list. I'll ensure it."
"Alec," she said, and the tone was one a mother might use with a child to explain why he couldn't make clotted cream from clouds. "Hawkins was covered in bruises. You are covered in blood. If anyone in the world were willing to overlook the initial scandal, this has made it worse." He looked out the window.
"That won't keep you from marrying."
She laughed, the sound without humour. "I haven't spent much time in society, Your Grace, but I assure you, it will."
"Then we double the dowry, triple it."
She sighed his name in the darkness, and he heard the resignation in the word, loathed it. "I wanted to marry," she said, and he stilled, keenly interested in the truth in the words. "I wanted the promise of family and future. And yes, of love. But if I must settle..." She trailed off, then returned to the idea with more conviction. "Alec, I don't wish to settle." Finally, something that they could agree upon.
"I won't have you settle. I would never ask you to."
That little laugh came again, so full of disbelief that he found it difficult to listen to.
"That's precisely what you're asking me to do."
She paused.
8 days is not enough for a man on that list to not be settling. 8 days is not enough for love."
"Damn it, Lillian, how does this end?"
Her head snapped back as though he'd hit her, and perhaps he had, with frustration and anger.
"Let's say I give you the funds and you run. Where do you go?"
She opened her mouth, closed it, again, and finally, "Away." He did not want her away.
"Where?"
A pause, then, "What is Scotland to you?"
Lillian, he began.
She shook her head. No, honestly, why do you prefer it? He shrugged.
It is home.
And what does that mean, she prodded.
It is...
safe.
Comfortable.
Unlike here. The difference between Scotland, wild and welcoming, and London, with its rules and its propriety, was so vast it made him laugh.
That is everything here is not. It is entirely different.
She nodded. And that is what I want. I want away from here, from this world. Why should you have it and not me? He wanted to give it to her. Wanted her to know the feeling of standing in a field of heather as the skies opened and rain washed away worry. But even Scotland could not disappear the past.
You think this world would not find you? You think you could live as a wealthy widow somewhere? Head to Paris and reign a silken queen? Travel to America and use the money to build an empire? You cannot. This world will return to haunt you. That is what happens to...
She waited. To whom?
To those who run.
He'd run, had he not. He'd vowed never to let them remind him of the past. And look at tonight. Look at his tattered clothes, his blood-stained hands. He would never outrun it. But if she found a husband, she might survive it. She would survive it.
You stay, meet the men, see what comes.
She threw up her hands in frustration.
Lord, deliver me from meddling guardians. Fine.
Silence fell, and Alec found himself at once grateful and exceedingly unsettled by it. Luckily, it did not last long.
I told you the coat didn't fit.
He slid his gaze to hers.
What did you say?
Your coat. You've split it to shreds. Your trousers, too. You look as though you stepped out of the wilderness and right into the ballroom.
To be expected from the Scottish brute, he said.
No, she said instantly, surprising him. Not brutish. It was a lie. He was covered in blood and his clothes were falling from his body. If he'd ever looked the part of a brute, now was it.
How do I look, then?
She cut him a look.
Are you searching for a compliment, Duke?
Just the truth.
She lifted one shoulder and let it fall in an affect he was coming to rather like. Not that he should like this woman. She was too beautiful to be anything but dangerous.
Big.
God knew that was true.
Too big.
For the coat and trousers, yes, she said. But not too big.
The rest of England might disagree.
I am not the rest of England.
She stopped, considering her next words, and added, I rather like how big you are. The words sent a thrill through him. She didn't mean it to come out the way it sounded. It was the darkness of the night and the motion of the carriage and the enclosed space. And it did not matter if he wanted her to say it again and again. Lillian Hargrove was not for wanting. Now, if only his body would listen.
I assure you, the rest of England disagrees, he said,
shifting on the seat. Wondering how much further they had to go. She smirked.
Not your countess.
Peg, he feigned ignorance.
My countess?
Lady Rowley, she doesn't think you are too big.
Peg didn't think that now, not when he stood before her, the Duke of Warwick, with a higher station than she'd found for herself. But once, Peg had valued him much, much less, even as he'd wanted nothing more than to belong to her. Alec looked out the window.
She's Lord Rowley's countess, don't you think?
I don't, actually, Lily said. I saw the way she touched at you, like she owned you, and the way you looked at her, as though...
She trailed off. He told himself not to speak, not to ask. But somewhere in the silence between them, there was something he wanted quite desperately to understand.
As though...
She shook her head and looked out the window. As though you wanted to be owned. He had wanted it. From the first moment she'd smiled at him when he was a boy, showing him what desire was. Before he'd known what she would make him, what he would make himself for her. He'd have done anything she asked. And he had. He'd trailed after her like a lovesick pup. Until she'd made it all clear.
Sweet Alec, girls like me don't marry boys like you.
But he wasn't about to tell Lillian Hargrove any of that.
Peg is not my countess.
But you were Peg's, Lily said, her silly frock turning her into a dog with a bone. He sighed, looking out the window of the carriage for a time.
Ages ago, she was sister to a schoolmate.
And you weren't a duke. He gave a little huff of laughter at that.
No, if I had been.
It was his turn to trail off. If you had been, Lily prompted, and he looked to her, finding her gaze locked on his, waiting. She was still and straight, as though she could wait forever for an answer. She wasn't getting it. He shook his head. You wanted her. Like nothing he'd ever wanted before. He'd wanted all the things she'd represented, all the pretty promises she'd never given. He'd wanted it all, like a fool. Lily did not move for a long while, and Alec refused to ask what she was thinking, instead saying,
So, you see, Lillian, I know what it is not to get the match you wanted.
She nodded. It seems so. Silence fell between them, and Alec became more and more aware of her in the darkness, of her long legs beneath the silk skirts of her dress, of her graceful hands wrapped in kidskin, clasped together in her lap. Those hands began to consume him. He watched them, wishing they were not gloved, wishing he could see them bare, wishing he could touch them, wishing they could touch him. He sat straight at that. She was not for touching, and he was not for her to touch. He looked out the window again. How far could they possibly be from the damn doghouse? Not close enough, clearly. And then she said softly, I thought he loved me. The sentence undid him, flooding him with jealousy and fury and a keen desire to stop the carriage, find Hawkins and finish what he'd started earlier. He flexed his right hand, the welcome sting of his knuckles reminding him that he'd done good damage, but not enough.
Did you love him?
He regretted the words the moment they left his mouth. The answer wasn't for him to know. And then she answered, slowly destroying him with every word. My mother died when I was a child. My father never remarried, and when he died, I went to live with the Duke. He was kind enough. He settled me, provided me with rooms and a more than generous allowance. She hesitated, searching for the right words. He took great pains to be a good guardian. He intended to give me a season, you know, before he died. But he wasn't a substitute for a family.
And the staff, he asked,
remembering how little they knew of her. She smiled, small and sad in the moonlight. They don't know how to interact with me. I'm neither fish nor fowl. Not an aristocrat, not a servant, not family, not entirely guest. Untouchable. Doubly so, somehow. She paused, wrapping her arms around herself, as though to ward off a chill. Looked away. I would go months without being touched by another person, beyond a maid helping to button a dress, a gloved hand taking mine to help me into a carriage. His gaze fell to her hands again, and he loathed the gloves anew.
Your room, under the stairs.
She lifted one shoulder in that shrug again. It was nice to hear people, up and down the stairs. At least I was reminded that there were others in the world. At least I was close to them, physically. Even if I didn't have them in my life, I would hear them laugh, the girls. They would giggle all the way down the stairs about some silly thing I never knew of. And I would have given anything to trade places with them, to be with them, instead of where I was, in between worlds.
Lily,
he said, his chest aching with desire to erase all that time alone. She'd never be alone again, he'd make sure of it. I would wonder sometimes, if I'd ever touch another person again, if I'd ever be loved. Looked back to Alec, the truth in her eyes. He made me feel loved. The words wrecked him, at once making him want to gather her close and set her far away, and then crush Hawkins into dust for taking advantage of Lily.
And you? Did you love him?
She looked away again. Who can say? Alec hated the words. The way they did not deny her feelings. He could say,
He wanted to put the words in her mouth, the categorical denial. Instead, he said,
"They did not deserve you."
One side of her lovely lips rose. "You have a terribly high opinion of me, Your Grace. The rest of the world would say it was I who did not deserve him."
"The rest of the world can hang."
She raised a hand to the glass in the carriage window, dragged a finger through the condensation there. "I did it, though," she said softly, lost in memory.
"Why?"
He couldn't resist the question. "A tempting promise. Sometimes..." He wondered if she would finish, and she was silent long enough that he thought she wouldn't. And then, "Sometimes you wait for so long that it all feels like love." His chest was suddenly devastatingly tight. What was she doing to him? He leaned forward, closing the distance between them and whispering,
"I don't wish to hurt you."
"I know that."
"I should never have come."
Nothing good ever came from being in London, especially not when London came with this beautiful woman who threw everything into chaos. "There's something rather noble about you coming, for me." Perhaps it was the way she said it that made it sound nearly magical, as though she'd stood naked beneath the stars like some pagan goddess and conjured him there. Perhaps it was the darkness, the wash of silver moonlight on her porcelain skin, that made him reach for her hands even as he knew he shouldn't. Knew it was a mistake of the highest possible caliber. Lily relinquished her hand without hesitation, and he turned it, palm up, revealing a little quartet of buttons on the inside of her wrist. Slowly, he unbuttoned the glove, and tugging on the fingers, slid it from her hand, revealing her smooth, bare skin. At first, he simply stared at it, feeling as though he existed on a precipice, looking down into a deep abyss from which he would not return. Lily's breath was coming in a quick staccato rhythm, or perhaps that was his own, filled with desire to touch her. "I wondered if I would ever touch another person again." The memory of the words whispered around them, and in their silent echo, Alec lifted his own hand to his mouth, pulling at the fingers of his glove with his teeth, removing it with efficiency, before tossing it aside and, before he could regret it, sliding his bare palm over hers. Her breath caught at the touch, at the slide of their fingers, at the way he captured her small hand in his much larger one. Her skin was so soft, like silk, like the sound of the little sigh that came on a lovely exhale. He did not look up at the sound, refused to, because he knew that if he did, he would not be able to stop himself from what came next. Instead, he stroked her hand, his palm running over hers, his fingers tracing the dips and valleys of her fingers, until only their fingertips touched, before he once again took her hand, lacing their fingers together tightly. "Palm to palm," she whispered, and he heard the barely there teasing in the words, the reference to their earlier discussion of Romeo and Juliet. He should let her go. He meant to. He didn't mean to say,
"The only part of the play that's worth anything."
He didn't mean to look at her, to find her too close and still infernally far away. He willed himself to move, to sit back, to release her. And then she whispered, "Let lips do as hands do."
"Fucking Shakespeare," he cursed,
tightening his grip and pulling her to him, his other hand still gloved, capturing her, sliding over her jaw, his long fingers curving around her neck and into her hair, scattering pins as he set his lips to hers and kissed her like he was starving and she was a banquet. She tasted like sin and sex and... he didn't know how it was possible, but she tasted like Scotland, wild and free and welcoming. He stopped, pulling away just enough to put a hair's breadth of space between them, and closed his eyes. He should stop. This wasn't the plan. It wasn't possible. She tasted like home. Just one more kiss, one more taste, quickly, just enough to tide him over until he could get back and breathe again. "Alec," she whispered, and the question in his name was his undoing. Not protest, not confusion. Desire. He knew, because he felt it too. Alec groaned and pulled her closer, releasing her bare hand and hauling her across the carriage and onto his lap, where he could get a better taste. He put one arm around her, protecting her should the carriage hit a rut and send her flying, and he returned to her lips, playing over them gently, softly, teasing her with his tongue until she gasped at the sensation, and he took full advantage, tasting her silken heat with long, luxurious promise. She groaned, unexpected and unfiltered, and he went hard as iron beneath her, wanting that sound again and again, that proof of her pleasure, of her passion. Her fingers slid into his hair then, and she held him close, meeting his tongue with hers, matching him with a kiss that threatened to send them both up in flames, along with the carriage. He growled his pleasure and captured her face between both hands, holding her still as he kissed her, stealing her sighs like a thief. And he was a thief, taking without hesitation. Or perhaps it was she who was the thief. They stole together, marauded together, pillaged together. And it was the most glorious thing he'd ever experienced. Her hands slid inside his shredded jacket as she moved against him, and he lifted her skirts, sliding his hands up her silk-clad thighs, lifting her again, setting her down astride him, scandalous and secret and everything he'd ever wanted. The carriage bounced again, and she clutched his sides, gasping against his lips at the movement. "Alec," she whispered. "Please." No, she didn't whisper. She begged. And how was he to deny her, especially when she lowered herself to his lap? To him. He was wickedly hard, too tight trousers suddenly, brutally uncomfortable. He groaned her name, stealing her lips again as he pulled her closer, until he could feel the heat of her through his trousers and her pantaloons, and one of her hands slid up over his chest and shoulders and into his hair again, pulling him close as her tongue met his again and again, and he ached for more of her. Her free hand clutched one arm, moving it, directing it, sliding it up her bodice to the place where silk met beautiful, pristine skin. "Touch me," she sighed. "Please." He had to stop. They had to stop. He lifted his lips, gasping for breath.
"Lily, we mustn't."
She opened her eyes, desire warring with something far more complicated in them. He could feel her heart racing beneath his fingers, where she held his hand to her, where she burned him with her beauty. "Please, Alec," she said, soft as silk. "Please want me." She made it sound like it was a choice, as though he did not ache for every inch of her, as though he did not wish to claim her in the most primal way possible and erase the memory of every man she had ever desired, as though he were worthy of her. His throat worked as he fought for strength, and he might have found it, might have if she did not take matters into her own hands. If she did not take his hand into her own, moving it until it cupped one full, glorious breast. "Please, Alec." He resisted the urge to move, terrified that if he did, she might continue with this mad temptation. Terrified that if he did, she might stop. Instead, he extracted his hand from the heat of her skirts and took her face in his hands. He pulled her close as possible without taking her lips, and looked deep in her eyes, the dim light of the lanterns beyond the windows casting wicked shadows across her beautiful face.
"Show me," he said.
But what he really meant was, "Use me." Her eyes widened at the words, and for a moment he thought her shock would stay her. As he watched, however, the surprise turned to desire, and like a gift from God, she did as he asked, as she was told. Time slowed in the small space, her hand guiding his, pressing him tight against her. "Touch me here," she said. He did, feeling her tighten beneath his palm, even through the layers of clothing. She sighed her frustration, pushing into him, eager for more, just as he was. He took pity on her.
"Do you intend to wear this dress again?"
She didn't understand. "What?"
"The dress. Are you wedded to it?"
She shook her head. "It is awful."
"Then let's do right by it,"
he growled, his massive hands coming to the neckline and grasping. Without hesitation, he pulled and tore the bodice in two, freeing her to his hands and gaze. She gasped her surprise. "You..." He had no time for discussion.
"Show me, Lily."
And she did, setting his hand to her breast. They groaned their mutual pleasure at the contact before Alec plucked at the tight tip, using thumb and finger to tempt her until he could no longer deny himself, and he set his lips to its twin. She cried out at the touch, her fingers sliding into his hair until he suckled, lightly, just barely, and she needed more, pulling him closer, silently begging him for more. When he gave it, reveling in the feel and taste of her, certain that if there was a heaven, it was this moment, relived again and again, she moved, pressing closer to him. The glorious heat of her cradling him hard and thick and desperate for release. He growled at the feeling, desperate to release himself, unwilling to do so, unable to trust himself to stop when necessary if he were. And then she was moving against him, making the most glorious little noises, sighing her pleasure and groaning her desire as he worked her with tongue and lips and made promises to his body that he could never keep. He would not take her. He would not soil her. She deserved better than him. He lifted his head and looked to her, her eyes closed and frustration clear as she rocked against him, desperate for something she could not find herself, desperate for something he could easily give her, for something he wanted to give her. He slid a hand beneath her skirts, the brush of his fingertips on the inside of her knee opening her eyes. Her mouth opened, and he shook his head, staying her words.
"Here," he teased, stroking there at her knee.
She shook her head. "No." He slid his hand up the outside of her pantaloons, loathing the fabric, the way it blocked her from his touch. But he deserved it, the denial, for what he did, for not being good enough for her. He deserved it, just as she deserved the pleasure he could give her. In this moment, just once, without taking his own.
"Here,"
he asked again, higher on her thigh, near the crease of it that marked the beginning of her most secret place, where he wanted to be more than he wanted to draw his next breath. She shook her head again, but this time the word came out on a little cry. "No." He found the slit in the pants and moved deeper, finding the soft curls there, stroking as she panted her desire, imagining their colour, a beautiful secret auburn.
"Here, then."
She was through with the game, and he saw the irritation in her gaze when she found his. And then she spoke, shocking the hell out of him. "Shall I show you?" She was fucking glorious. He replied instantly.
"Please."